Welcome to Let's Talk About Tests Baby, a weekly podcast about software testing, QA processes, agile, and other general geekery. My name's Jem Hill, and I'll be your host. Hello listeners, and welcome to part two of my debt series, and this is about conceptual debt, or product design debt, or UX debt. There are many different names. It's a subset of technical debt. It's specifically related to the design of the product or the UX of the product. So a lot of development cycles, especially iterative cycles, start with a minimum viable product. That's what's at the end of the sprint. And then you improve upon it with each release, adding more features or extending features with each new sprint. You experiment with design and features and add or change based on feedback and so on and so on. The issue is, if the feature is successful, then the design UX refactoring very rarely happens. You just move on to the next feature because that's fine, that can stay there, which is fine. The issue comes if more and more features are added, more successful features are added, or if some changes are made, and then the refactoring doesn't happen, so you end up with just a load of UX on top of each other. My prime example of this is the crowded homepage, especially for online stores. In my opinion anyway, navigation for online stores when people are adding more lines and sales and categories, it gets really, really complex. Especially as a site grows and grows and a store gets more and more established, you end up with like this huge and complex navigation. And it's very hard to change navigation. It's hard to advocate for that kind of change because the users, though they may be frustrated, are so used to the navigation as it is that people don't want to put people off or maybe even hide certain pages. Not hide them, but they fear they won't get the traffic that they currently are if they move them somewhere else in the navigation. And then on homepages you get offers and newsletter sign-ups and social media blocks. And then you get, on top of that, there are services like Optimizely. Optimizely allows you to do A/B testing on the site without actually changing the code of the code on the actual site. So let me explain a few things. So Optimizely is the name of the service. A/B testing is, so you will make a change to a site, but only have the change shown for a certain amount of time or to certain users, things like that. And then you look at the results from the users that go on the changed one and the users that go on the old site. And you can compare and contrast and see if it's worth making that change. Optimizely basically changes, you can change like certain things about CTAs or buttons or colours and things without actually having to go into the code of the site and commit the change. And it will show it to a certain proportion of users. I mean, I think you have, I've not really dug too deep into Optimizely, but you can say a percentage of users get one or the other. Anyway, that was a longer side to say that homepages can get very cramped very quickly and they can change quite a lot. And that can sometimes lead to a very busy page and experience. So I wanted to separate out UX debt from the umbrella of technical debt because there's a whole different way of approaching it and solving it in a way because, first of all, it's harder to quantify unless you do an awful lot of A/B testing and get those figures out. So you can say this percent of users didn't drop out. With this compared to how it was before, because sometimes it doesn't actually necessarily affect performance or functionality like the more traditional technical debt does. It might not be as visible, like a slightly clumsy user journey versus a bug somewhere. It's not quite as clear cut as technical debt can be, and of course that doesn't mean it's not important, it's just as different and it requires a different approach, whether that be A/B testing to get the numbers from traffic or whether it's surveys, things like that. You need to go a different way of approaching it to see if it's there first and then fixing it. And fixing it can be a large change as well, and that might be quite scary or time consuming for the stakeholders to be able to stomach if it requires more budget or a large change, especially if it's an e-commerce site where people are relying on the site to bring money in directly, which often means that UX debt just is left there or is only fixed in slight increments, which doesn't necessarily fix the cause or gets to the crux of the matter. And sometimes it can't. You can't strip it all down and re-add it because there's so much stuff built there and because it would require redoing the entire site. A blog post that I link uses Vegas as an example of product design debt because there's been so much stuff built on to get attention and to add more features, and so it's a very confusing and confused-looking thing, especially if you compare a shot taken, like, from above and a shot taken just from... not from the ground necessarily, but just, like, out of one of the top of the buildings, where you can just see this sprawling mess. Where you look down from above, like, look at the bigger picture, you might be able to see the roads, because obviously it's America, it's quite gritty. Whereas looking from slightly closer, you just see the sprawl everywhere as far as you can see. So sometimes you might not necessarily even realise there's a problem to be fixed if you're looking at it as a whole, the website as a whole, from quite far away, because you're not using it as a customer or a user would use it. So how do you avoid or minimise this type of debt? Obviously avoiding it would be the ideal situation. That's not always possible. A lot of the time it's not possible. Ideally, well, you go in there with a plan, and you plan it carefully, you model it, and you future-proof, which takes a lot of time up front, but it'll save time in the long run. And this really changes depending on what sort of work you're interacting with, whether you're in-house, or an agency, or a software as a service company. Because I've worked as... I'm currently in an agency, and I've worked in a software as a service company, and I have more experience with agency work, but... they're two different kettles of fish. The feedback is different, the stakeholders are all different. So I'm going to focus on agency work because that's what I have the most experience with. But in a way, it's kind of easier for a software as a service company because more often than not, there is a product kind of timeline or a life cycle, and there's kind of a backbone to the ideas. And while you might go off and try different things, there's still that backbone to come back to of these are the milestones that we want to reach. Anyway, to agency work. So, as the team working on the product or the site, you need to interact with the stakeholders, first of all, to get their overall vision, their brand, what they want from their product, and what ideas they've got from their users, what their users want, what they know their users want to do or need to be able to do. Just like you would in any sort of workshop, ideas, requirements, gathering stage. And just as you think about features here, you need to think about the UX as well. You need to start thinking about what sort of user journeys are going on, and then building both features and UX from these user journeys and these personas and scenarios that you're building up through these requirement gathering stage. And then once you start building, you can try to refactor as you go. Again, sprints are iterative, so you can try and refactor as more features get built. You can reevaluate the UX and evaluate the UX both for features separately and how it fits into the whole, and getting a regular feedback from the stakeholders on if new features affect the UX, whether it be something as simple as menus having to change because there's too many things in them, or how user journeys change. It's useful to get their feedback early and often, and make sure that they're considering the wider scale of the project as well, because they might get caught up in the details and not step back and look at how the system works and looks as a whole. It can be a little harder when you're in an agency compared to a software as a service company, because there could be up to two layers of separation, maybe even a few more, but at least two layers of separation between you who are building the product and the people who are actually going to be using it, because there's the team building the project, then the stakeholders, then the users. And while sometimes there's some crossover between the stakeholders and the users, that's not always the case. The stakeholders are often looking at the back end and the admin side more than they're looking at the actual front end that the users are interacting with. And so sometimes there's a bit of a disconnect there that you need to take into account when you're doing this sort of work, and when you're building the UX, you need to get as much information from the stakeholders as you can about what their users are like and what they know of their user base. And that, because of that lack of interaction with the people who are using the public-facing bit of the site, there can be a lot of inadvertent UX debt. And that's not necessarily because of it being built and planned badly, but because of lack of knowledge of what the clients are like. Because obviously you have to make assumptions on what level of knowledge of websites they have and what they're used to. and you've just got to follow those best practices as much as you can within the context of that project. And then you've got to balance those two things out. You've got to balance making the stakeholders happy and making sure they're happy with the project you're giving them, and ensure that UX best practices, that's hard to say, UX best practices and the wants of the users are all met as well. It's quite a bit of a juggling act, which is why you have to start planning as you're planning features and the build, and ensure, if possible, that you can refactor the UX if needed as well. And even just something simple as rejigging the navigation once you've got all the features in there that are needed can really make the difference. Because if someone can know there's a menu right there and use that menu, then you might have saved them a whole lot of pain and you've got a user starting a journey there. You're not going to avoid debt entirely because, as I said in the last project, shit happens, stakeholders change their minds, features require different user paths on reflection. There's going to be some debt, but with careful planning and with refactoring time, again, you can mitigate and reduce that debt as much as possible. Just like you would with refactoring code, you need to be able to have the time to do the same thing for the front end as well. Because it don't matter how good your code is if no one can use it properly or find it in the navigation. I'm going to wrap it up here for this week. Thank you very much for listening. And tune in next week for the third and final part in my series on debt, which will all be about testing debt. Before I go, I am aware that this episode and last episode have not been my area of expertise. So corrections, comments, always welcome. The contact details are on the site letstalkabouttest.xyz. And I will talk to you all next week. Bye!